This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to The Late Show. I'm Maxine, and it's great to be here a little later than usual on a Friday. Welcome to our live listeners, and a very special welcome and thank you to those of you who have downloaded the show. Welcome to the podcast. Tonight, I'm going to be thinking once again about leadership, but specifically about leaders and learning, leaders' growth and improvement.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. It's brilliant to be here again, a little bit later than usual. So I'm here for the late show, not the twilight show, having done a little bit of a swap round this week. So that is slightly different for me. But anyway, welcome to those of you who've downloaded the show. I hope you enjoy it. And as I said before, we're thinking about leadership again. 2 weeks ago, we were thinking about leadership. Back to it. But specifically, this time on this show, we're thinking about leaders and learning, leaders and their growth and their improvement. And we're ultimately going to be asking the question, are great leaders born or are they made? Can you become a great leader, or is it something that you either are or aren't? I think in reality, it's not that binary, but I think it's a good question and we'll have a look at it later. So just for a little bit of context, and again, welcome to those who are joining us live. It's brilliant that you're here, and thank you if you've downloaded the show. Earlier this month, it was a real privilege to speak to Alice Gregson, the CEO of Forum Strategy, about the qualities of great leaders. And my last blog and my last show was all about that, about what are the qualities, what are the traits and the behaviours and the skills of really great leaders. And when I was talking to Alice, there were two key ideas that underpinned that whole discussion. So before we even got onto the idea of talking about what those leadership qualities are, there were these two key ideas. And the first of those was to note that actually context is key. So there's no one single answer to what makes a great leader. It's a huge, huge discussion, and it is also really subjective. But the qualities that are needed to be the best leader for one organisation will be very different to those needed in another. And that's really specific. So if we think about school leadership, thinking about head teachers, one school that needs to make rapid change might need a different style of leadership to somewhere else. So that does vary. So that whole idea about context and great leaders, Alice spoke as well about great leaders that are in really high pressure environments, in emergency departments, for example. They would need to be different than others leading, say, in a retail setting or are in a less pressurised environment. I know retail could be really pressurised, but in different settings. So context is key. What the place is like, what those needs are, will vary. But the second idea underpinning that whole discussion about what makes a great leader was the idea that those leadership traits, the behaviours and the skills aren't fixed. But that we are all, those of us that are leaders, and I would say in teaching, everybody's a leader because you are a leader in your own classroom, or you might lead a subject or a year group or a whole group of subjects, or be an assistant head or a send co, or lead on one particular area, or be assistant head, deputy head, head teacher, CEO, all those areas of leadership. But that those traits, those things that make great leaders, they aren't fixed, and that people can grow and people can become great leaders. So again, I found that second point about skills and traits not being fixed so interesting. And that's what I want to give some more thought to in tonight's show. So in tonight's show, all about leadership, with that sort of whole idea about what makes a great leader, particularly looking around that idea about the qualities of great leaders, about the skills and traits and behaviours not being fixed. These are the three sort of key areas that tonight's show, that this podcast, if you've downloaded it, is going to explore. And I don't have a guest for this evening, so it is just me. So I would really love to hear what you think. Any thoughts and contributions and comments are really welcome as we look at these three broad areas. So first of all, because we're thinking about growth, and because we're thinking about growth and change, I think it makes sense to start with a reflection on some psychology and some theories around growth. So in particular, having a little bit of a look at Carol Dweck's growth mindset theory. And I will talk about that because there are huge pros and cons of that. And it's not a perfect theory, and that it's been debated and discussed enormously. But I do think it's still relevant. So first of all, I'm just going to start off with a little bit of a look at growth mindset theory. The next section, then, I think it'd be really interesting to look at some examples of learning and of growth, and asking you, and also asking you maybe to ask yourself, if you're listening back, what is it, or is there anything that you never thought you'd be able to do? Something that you thought, well, that's not for me, or I'm just not that type of person, I'll never be able to do that, or I don't do that, that's not me. Have you got a fixed idea of something that you can do, that you've known that you've always been able to do, and you've got those beliefs, and where have they come from? So some examples of learning and growth, of surprising yourself, or maybe of not surprising yourself, and something that you've always known that you could do, but particularly that idea about growth and change. And then thirdly, to reflect back on leadership. So to think back to the show a couple of weeks ago, when we talked to Alice Gregson, when we talked about leadership traits, the qualities, the behaviours and the skills of great leaders, and just thinking about how those behaviours and skills might be developed. So if you are an aspiring leader listening to this, how might you grow those skills? Might you not even be an aspiring leader yet? Might you not even realise that that's for you? And maybe listening to this, you'll think, oh my goodness, well, who knows? Maybe I could do this. But that's what we're going to be looking at. Can they be developed? And I suppose that question, are great leaders born or made? Are there any things that leaders automatically have that they're born with? But again, just starting from that idea that a couple of weeks ago we talked about those skills not being fixed, and that they are something that people can grow and people can develop and move on. So there we go. There's our three things that we're going to have a look at this evening. So just to pause for breath really, really briefly, I'm going to just then start with this whole thought about growth mindset. But what I'm going to do before we start to look at growth mindset, I'm just going to take us for a really brief pause, and we're going to hear a little bit from our sponsors.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support headteachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Great to hear there from our two sponsors, Bloomsbury, there, just hearing from them, and the Teach Well Toolkit. Really great show, actually, with the Teach Well Toolkit guys on earlier this week. Definitely worth a listen. Some really good quality ideas about staff wellbeing that is definitely worth anybody in school having a listen to. So thinking about growth mindset, so the whole idea, thinking about continued growth, learning and evolution, really did make me reflect, because we often have views or ideas of who we are and of what we can do. And they're really likely to be based actually on what we've been told through our formative years. So I think this, as school leaders and as teachers, this gives us two areas to reflect on, because it gives us the area to reflect on about ourselves and about how we view ourselves, but also as the adults that are involved in the lives of young people, what messages, what might we be sharing with young people as well about who they are and what they can do? And it does always just flag up to me that responsibility for school teachers to just, and school leaders, just to be mindful of this. So these ideas that we may have of who we are and of what we can do and what we can't do, or what we might believe we'll never be able to do, can be actually factual. You know, they can be linked directly to our physical attributes or in our genes. Or they might be linked to the environment that we grew up in or that we are in now. So I think that's really, really important to note, actually, that yes, we do need to analyse. And I think this whole idea of growth is really, really important. But there are some factual things sometimes to be aware of. And there are also some environmental things to be aware of. And that doesn't mean that that environment needs to continue limiting us. But it does mean that we need to be aware of it, or aware particularly with other people that we're helping and supporting and with children that we're working with, that there could be things in their environment that are holding them back. And just changing the way that they think is going to be harder. And changing the way we think is really difficult anyway. You know, that it's massively oversimplified when we talk about growth mindset, just to say, just have a growth mindset. Just think more positively. So we'll come on to that in just a minute. So thinking about the things we may think we can't do, or some less positive or limiting views of who we are. Like I said, they may be factual. They may be based on physical capabilities or circumstances beyond our control. But many, many, many of those barriers are actually based in limiting beliefs or assumptions, and not actually based on facts at all. To us, they may seem real, but if we dig down and we look at the evidence and the facts, we might be able to see, and we might realise that they're not based on facts, that they are our assumptions. Now, we may go through our whole lives never finding this evidence. We may go through our whole lives not uncovering that some of these beliefs are actually just assumptions. When I say just assumptions, we can't ever underestimate the power of those assumptions. And those assumptions may be deep-rooted. And that's why that whole idea of self-discovery, and this is why, to me, coaching is such a fascinating thing, because we can start to explore those barriers and have a look at what those barriers are, all those, or are in the way. So when there is a barrier, when there's something stopping us from achieving something, or when there's something that we're holding up that's based on an assumption. So when there's a barrier, when there's something getting in the way, according to a fascinating coach and writer and psychologist, Nancy Klein, who developed the concept of the thinking environment. And that is a really, really fascinating read. If you are interested in reading about coaching and about self-development and self-discovery, Nancy Klein's Thinking Environments, her books Time to Think and More Time to Think, are really, really worth reading. Both for that whole idea about the power of listening and the power of listening partners, of just spending that time giving quality thought, quality listening to somebody. That is hugely powerful. But also there's something really interesting about the theory that's in that book, because what Nancy Klein says is that whenever there's a barrier, whenever there's something that's holding someone back, there's always a limiting assumption beneath that. It's always based on an assumption that if we reframe our thinking, if we think, what if you imagine that you couldn't fail? What if you imagined that nobody would laugh at you? What if you imagined that everybody would see something positive in what you were doing? If you could turn those around, then you would be able to be successful. Now, those assumptions sometimes are directly beneath the barrier. Sometimes it's a straightforward, you're assuming something. And then you look and when you start to examine it, particularly if you're either working with a thinking partner or a coach or you're self-coaching, thinking about how you work, then you can see straight away that is an assumption, that it's not a fact. And then you can start to turn that around. But sometimes actually the first layer is actually a fact. But if you then dig a little bit deeper and look a little bit further into that, you will be able to find and keep going. It could be really buried layers and layers and layers underneath, but you will be able to find somewhere an assumption that you can challenge. And then that is going to be the route to your success. So that whole idea, I think, is fascinating, that when you're looking, when you think that you can't do something, when there's a block, I'll never be able to do that. What are the assumptions? What might be an assumption? Why are you saying that? Why don't you think you'll do that? So it could be about applying for a particular job. It could be about going for a promotion. I'm just not a person that is a leader. What assumption is that based on? Is that based on something that somebody told you, that you're not a leader? Is there a fact under that that maybe in the past you've not shown leadership qualities because you haven't had the chance to learn them or get to know them? But again, it might be a case of digging, like I said, under a few layers of that, because it's really, really important to think about, where are the assumptions? What are you making? What are the things that aren't actually factual, but they're just a belief that you have? And when I say just, that's not underestimating how powerful those just beliefs actually are, because they can really, really hold you back. So moving on, because I think that whole idea about thinking environments is absolutely fascinating. But moving on now to this whole idea of the concept of growth mindset. And this brings us on to the work of Stanford University psychologist Carol Dweck and her book Mindset. And this theory has been challenged. It's frequently been misunderstood, misinterpreted, misused. But I do still think it is very, very relevant. So in short, a growth mindset is the belief that your abilities, our abilities and intelligence aren't fixed, but rather that they can be developed through hard work, persistence, and a willingness to learn and grow from failure and to not give up. Yeah, so again, really, really sort of important view. So again, that whole growth mindset is pretty much, that's why I got thinking about this. When we were talking to Alice a couple of weeks ago and talking about the idea that leadership qualities aren't fixed, that really got me thinking straight away about growth mindset. This whole idea that our abilities and our intelligence aren't fixed traits, but they can be developed through hard work, persistence, and a willingness to learn from failure. So Carol Dweck and her team, their research goes back a long way. So it goes back right to the 1970s. And, you know, 1973 study of the way in which children responded to setbacks. And their evidence, again, their research continued through the 80s. And again, the first article actually had a title including mindset theory, and it came up in the 1988. And research carried on through the 1990s, and you know, in 1998, really big piece of work, five studies by Carol Dweck and her team that actually confirmed that not only, so a lot of the research had been around how individuals and how groups of particularly children respond, and how if children showed that they had a growth mindset or expressed that they believed that they could learn and grow and get better, they were more likely to make more progress and more likely to be able to cope with failure much better and were more resilient. And that, when we're thinking about children, we're thinking about learning, all those things that we want children to be, that, you know, first fail is first attempt in learning, that whole thing. So those bits of research were all about that. But what I think is fascinating about this piece from late 90s, from 1998, said that actually the research showed that mindsets can be applied to entire groups, and that there were sometimes people with fixed mindsets. So fixed mindsets, the opposite to a growth mindset. If you believe that intelligence is just as it is, as you're born, that's it. What you're born with is what you've got. That's it. You're not going to be able to change. That you know, if you how intelligent you are, how skilled and talented you are, that's fixed. That's a fixed mindset. But what they were saying, that people with fixed mindsets were more likely to make stereotypical judgments of ethnic groups or of occupational groups, and that they also formed more extreme trait judgments of new groups. So hugely damaging in a way, that research is saying, isn't it, of people making some of those assumptions and of people not just applying fixed mindsets to themselves, but applying fixed mindsets to others. Really, really, really important. Again, in the late 90s, Carol Dweck found some evidence that, and if this is a really important one for teachers, and this has been, I think, misinterpreted in many ways, but found that growth and fixed mindsets can be influenced by the type of praise or criticism people receive in childhood. So where adults had, when they were children, had received feedback focused on their character, and it had said things like, you're so smart, you're really gifted, you're very creative, you're very talented, or the opposite, and some negative feedback if they'd been told that they're unintelligent or that they're dull, that type of feedback was likely to lead to that child as an adult developing a fixed mindset. Whereas process feedback focused on what the person receiving the feedback is doing, their strategies and their effort. So you put a lot of work into this, or I like how you always ask how things work. I like what you're doing there. I like how you do that. I like that you're working hard. That was more likely to lead to people developing a growth mindset, and also more likely for people developing higher esteem. Into the 2000s, Dweck continued her research and wrote her first edition of Mindset, The New Psychology of Success, in 2006. So, you know, having a growth mindset means that you believe that you can improve your intelligence, that you can know more, learn more, be more intelligent, be better at something. Whereas having a fixed mindset means that you are just going to settle and just going to accept particular limitations and not challenge that. And again, whilst it has, you know, growth mindset. There's huge benefits in mindset theory, and it has been embraced quite rightly as a way to foster success and resilience in individuals. So if we've got this belief that if we keep working harder, it's going to bring success, it's going to make things better for us, then it is going to be positive. There are also some negatives and there are some problems. So one problem, and again this has also been counter-challenged by Dweck, but other studies have failed to replicate the outcomes of Dweck's studies. So where Dweck had proved through their research that children that had displayed a growth mindset had then been more successful in tasks or had been resilient, had been less likely to give up and fail, then other studies had failed to replicate that. The other issue is that what growth mindset doesn't, and for me this is a huge problem, and this is something that I think when we talk about growth mindset and we talk about mindset theory, we need to be really mindful of, is that it places huge emphasis on individual effort and achievement, and that's really valid. Actually, that's not a problem, and it's really true that hard work and dedication definitely supports our route to success. But what it ignores, and this is the problematic bit for me, it ignores that there are many, many external factors that can impact an individual's ability to grow and develop. So, you know, for example, a child growing up in poverty would be unlikely or may not have the same access to the same educational resources or opportunities as a child from a more affluent family. And, you know, in such case, you know, in cases like that, no amount of that child, you know, really trying to adopt a growth mindset or being supported in that, and however much of a growth mindset that child were to have, it would be really, really difficult for that sort of thinking to compensate for some of those systemic inequalities and injustices. And if we were to just doggedly focus on effort and that's all, it might cause us to lack a certain degree of empathy for anyone who was struggling due to circumstances beyond their control. So, you know, there's other stuff that's going on, that no matter how hard people are trying, there's still other stuff going on that is real and is holding them back. And if we just get too caught up in that whole idea of growth mindset, it could blinker us to that, and that would be wrong. So it is about more than just working hard and believing. There are some barriers that are real and some systemic barriers that are real. Another potential concern of growth mindset is that if somebody is struggling and somebody's, you know, facing obstacles or setbacks, if we were to just really just focus only on growth mindset and say, look, just try hard, just believe in yourself, that would be ignoring the actual real situation there and the reality that some obstacles are insurmountable without additional support and resources. So I know if somebody was suffering with their mental health, someone with clinical depression, it wouldn't be possible to say just think positively, and to ask them to adopt a growth mindset would be worse than unhelpful. It could be potentially extremely harmful. And again, another potential concern of mindset is around individuals actually wanting to or needing to justify their own success. And again, it might be, you know, if it's positive that somebody's successful because they've worked hard and because they, you know, they've really tried and they've had a growth mindset. But if somebody was to still not be successful, and you know, to sort of blame them or to just sort of say, okay, right, you just needed to have more of a growth mindset there, that also might not be very helpful. And it might also hide a little bit as well. That's that whole idea of just being aware that sometimes there are other factors. And again, just it's always important to have balance with these things. And you know, in at the moment and in our world at the moment, we are very focused on self-improvement. And I think that's a real positive thing. But if you're not getting there, if things aren't always working and things aren't always going to be, I think it can be a danger if people get too caught up in that whole idea about not being good enough or about just, you know, just sort of thinking, oh, crikey goodness, I really need to have a growth mindset. And that just adds on to another great long list of things that people need to do, need to have. And that could, you know, lead to burnout, anxiety, and really, really be damaging for people if they're not getting the improvements that they want. So we do need sometimes to acknowledge, but it does definitely have some great positives. And this whole idea of thinking about growth mindset and using that as a way to approach our personal development, as long as we're aware of its limitations and its potential downsides. And again, whilst it's important to focus on effort and, you know, the achievements that we make and how we grow, as long as we then do still acknowledge that there are some external factors at play in our life and there are systemic inequalities, and as long as we're really careful not to ever use growth mindset as a way to blame or shame ourselves, or, you know, say we should be doing this or we should be doing that, and to still have empathy, then it still is something that is incredibly positive. And I think thinking about how we can use growth mindset, but also take a more nuanced and compassionate approach as well with that to our personal growth, then we can really have the opportunity to thrive. So that's the first bit then, really, just thinking about that growth mindset and thinking about what it is, thinking about its pros and its cons there. And now I'm just going to move on to and have a look at what are some of the barriers. What are some of the things? What might be, and I wonder if this would be useful for you to think about as well. What are some of those assumptions? What are any of those messages that you might have had in your life? And I'm going to share a few of mine, and I'm going to share some that are related to leadership and some visions around what I might have been or what I've been told that I was at various times, but also then think about how it is that we might be able to change those. But what I'm going to do first before going on to those is I'm going to just go to the news for a little while.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by Teachwell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more, and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
The BBC reported on a long-term study by the Institute of Fiscal Studies, which found children living near Sure Start centres did better at GCSE. The research says these living near a centre performed up to 3 grades better than those living further away. Sure Start began in 1998 to support new parents, especially in disadvantaged areas, but due to austerity, many have since closed. The Department for Education said its Family Hub scheme had a number of advantages over the Sure Start model. The IFS study used postcodes from when children were age 5 to determine proximity to centres and looked at the GCSE results of those children 11 years later. It found what it describes as big improvements in performance in those living near a centre, especially those from low-income backgrounds. Former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, Labour Chancellor at the time the initiative was launched, said the UK now needs a new Sure Start and described the results as what most parents already know, that a supportive environment in early years was life transforming. Among all children in the study, those who live near a Sure Start centre performed better than those who lived far away. But the trend was most pronounced amongst those eligible for free school meals and those from minority ethnic backgrounds. According to The Guardian, schools in England could lose up to £1 billion in funding by 2030, with exceptional falls in pupil numbers prompting closures. Mergers and school closures are already happening in parts of London, where pupil numbers have been falling for some time. According to the think tank Education Policy Institute, the North East is projected to see the greatest decline in primary pupil numbers, down by 13% by 2028-29. At secondary school level, Yorkshire and Humber, the North East and London are projected to have the largest falls in pupil numbers, although other areas, including the West Midlands and the South East, have rising numbers. Pupil numbers had grown because of a fertility surge in the 2000s. But as that cohort has moved through, numbers are now falling. Even with increases in per pupil funding, the EPI predicts schools will find it hard to balance budgets as fewer pupils do not lead to reduced costs. The decline is due mainly to a falling birth rate and changing migration patterns. Full details of the EPI projections can be found on the Guardian website. Schools Week reports on the decision by Ofsted to appoint a former chief inspector, Dame Christine Gilbert, to lead the independent inquiry into its response to the death of Ruth Perry. Dame Christine served as the HMCI from 2006 to 2011 and now chairs the Education Endowment Foundation. The Learning Review follows a coroner's ruling in December that an Ofsted inspection contributed to the death of Mrs. Perry, then head teacher of Caversham Primary School. The review will consider actions Ofsted took in response to hearing about the death of Ruth Perry. Dame Christine will have access to relevant records, Ofsted staff, and the opportunity to meet with Ruth Perry's family as part of the review. The review will not examine the November 2022 inspection of Caversham Primary. Teaching unions have expressed concern about the appointment of Gilbert, saying it was critical that the review was robust, independent and impartial, and that some would, rightly, question the notion of a former HMCI reviewing the work of Ofsted. A report will be completed after the review and recommendations will focus on future actions. Schools Week also reports on a plan for the Department for Education to work with the Scout Association to provide 40,000 explorers, those aged 14 to 18, with the skills and knowledge they need to consider a career in teaching. The DfE will work with the Scouts to create age-appropriate activities that inspire young people to consider a career in teaching, linking to relevant badges and awards. It did, however, clarify that there are currently no plans for a teaching badge. The policy is part of the DfE's Get Into Teaching plan, which aims to elevate the status of the profession and target new audiences who have not yet considered teaching as a career. The scheme will launch in September and it is hoped that it will reach 40,000 young people. The Scouts will create support and guidance material for those running the programme. The initial one-year contract is worth £43,000, but can be extended subject to budget availability. Finally, A teenager who campaigned for skateboarding to be included in school qualifications is proud to see it added to the list of approved GCSE sports in Wales. According to the report on the BBC News website, Qualifications Wales has added 13 new sports to the approved list for GCSE PE. Other newly allowed sports include BMX, shooting, kickboxing and wakeboarding. The new Made for Wales GCSE in Physical Education and Health will be available for first teaching from September 2026. The change makes Wales the second UK nation to include skateboarding, behind Northern Ireland. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
I've always considered myself.
Thank you, Jo, as always, for a really fantastic news bulletin there. Thank you. So we've been thinking about learning and growth and the whole idea of growth mindset and that idea that our qualities, that our skills aren't fixed and that with hard work and with perseverance, we can grow and change. But also noting that there are some situations that may be beyond our control. But what's important, I think, is to have a look at those subjectively and to really analyse carefully what are the facts and what are the assumptions. And maybe interestingly, where do those assumptions come from? But once we know that something's an assumption, once we know that that's not fact, then that's when we've got the confidence to try to change it. So I'm just going to think for a little while, just briefly about, and I'm going to share with you some examples of assumptions, of beliefs, of learning and growth that I've personally discovered fairly recently, actually, in the last few years that have just shook and have changed things that I've held as beliefs for a long time. And then the last section is going to be thinking about some of those leadership qualities and leadership skills. So onto assumptions, onto some of my assumptions of what I can and can't do. So I post a fair bit on social media about running. Now, I'm not in the marathon this weekend, and never ever say never, because that would go against this whole idea of growth mindset. But I came to running very, very late in life. Well, what I consider to be late in life, because most runners don't start running in their 40s. Now, I'd always had this belief, this message. I'm Maxine, and I'm really bad at PE. And at school, I would do anything to try and avoid it. And not terribly good practice, not terribly good role modelling now to youngsters for thinking about healthy and building active lives. But oh my goodness, I hated it. And I just thought, I can't do it. I can't do PE. The whole idea of the cross-country run, of going from nowhere to suddenly running around the whole field, and it just felt horrible. And that was it. I just then got in my mind that you can't run. I don't do it. I'm not very good at PE. There were some elements of catching. I'm really short-sighted. And that wasn't actually uncovered till I was 17 and learning to drive. So that probably wasn't helping with the catching and the hitting a ball and other elements of PE. But I just got in my mind, this is bad. I don't do this. I don't run. It hurts. I hate it. It's not me. I'll never, ever be able to run. And then we reached a point, and I started doing some training with a really good guy who was actually a son of a friend who had started up doing some personal training and advised me that you can actually just break this down into really small manageable chunks, and introduced me so that I could go and do this on my own to the Couch to 5K. Never heard of it. Thought, well, I'm not a runner. I'm never going to be able to do that. But you've probably heard of Couch to 5K. It is really good. I recommend it, because you just run for, I think it's about a minute, and then walk for 90 seconds and just repeat that a few times for a start. And it builds it up so gradually. And I started doing it, and I just thought, actually, this is okay. And you get a voice. I had Sarah Millican on mine, but there's Joe Wiley, there's Michael Jordan. And you know, when I think it was about 5 or 6 weeks in, that the voice in, you know, Sarah Millican in her accent said to me, "You're a runner now." And I'd run for 20 minutes consistently, which you do after about 5 weeks. I can't remember exactly without checking. And actually, you can do it, because I'd built it up into manageable chunks. And by this point, running had become something that I was actually starting to enjoy. I dare start admitting to people that I was actually doing it. Then it morphed into something that I could take the dogs and run with the dogs. And it just became something that I look back now and I think, oh, crikey, if I could start that in my 40s, if I had had the idea that maybe I could run when I was younger, I probably would have been able to. And I look back now and I realise a lot of that was about assumptions, that was limiting beliefs, that was worried about how I looked, worried about being seen as somebody who wasn't doing this really well. If I'd just had that sort of attitude, and I think that, you know, they often say youth is wasted on the young. If I'd had that sort of not care less about what I look like running up and down the road as a youngster, and also coupled with the idea that it is just assumption, it's not facts that I can't run, you know, I'm able-bodied, I'm tall, I'm actually, I suppose, in some respect built a little bit like a runner, and I can do it, that became something that I could do. And that for me was a huge thought, actually, about this is something that I can do. Another one that, again, this is my latest endeavour, and not quite so far down the line with this. I really didn't like swimming when I was younger. I didn't mind going in the sea and being outside swimming, but I really hated it if I'd got to actually get my face anywhere near the water. So I've developed this really bizarre way of swimming with my head about a foot out of the water. And of course, it's not terribly efficient and you don't get very far very fast, but I've just got this awful memory of chlorine and water at my nose and it just being horrible. So I just thought, that's it. I just can never swim. I will never be a good swimmer. I just won't be able to do it. That's not me. I'm Maxine. I'm not a swimmer. I'm just not going to be able to do that. So I decided I've had a go at the running one and sort of thinking future, thinking forward, thinking, well, maybe, you know, I've, with this and it may be you've got to sometimes de-risk things, I think, and think as I get older and a little bit more arthritic, apologies to the younger listeners not wanting to listen to an old fogey talking this evening, but thinking, well, swimming might be a good useful way of doing that cardiovascular exercise, plus thinking about if I could do the swimming, if I can do the running, I think I probably can do the swimming. So what I've done, in the same way that I had broken the running down into bite-sized chunks, I've broken the swimming down, and I've actually started going to swimming lessons, and I've got a really good teacher, because this is one of the other things that I think about where you assume you can't do something. Actually, get a third party involved who's got some skill. And she's broken it down into really bite-sized chunks, gently just putting my face in water and blowing bubbles. And it sounds silly, someone that's nearly 50 putting their face in water in the swimming pool, blowing bubbles, but it's really good. And I'm at the point now where, having built it up in small bite-sized chunks, I realise there's no physical reason that I can't swim. There's nothing that's different about my nose and my abilities to the next person. I just hadn't learnt properly. And I'd just given up and I'd just decided that wasn't me and I wasn't going to do it. So, yeah, Claire, triathlon next. Who knows? Maybe, because I do also like riding my bike. That of all the exercise things is something that I enjoy. But the swimming was just very much about that whole idea with the running. Well, let's see if I can do swimming, because they're two things that I was told you just can't do these, or I just, that was my view, my own. And I think some of it was that I had been told that as well. You know, the running, the PE, that's not for you. And that's all about the groupings that you then end up when you go out and you're a youngster, and the idea, the vision that you have of yourself. And I've just kept that right up until adult life. I don't run. I can't run. And I don't swim, and I can't swim my face in the water. So that's why I've been really determined to break those things down and to just try step by step, little by little, to keep going. And it's not all happening overnight. You know, with the running, like I said, I'm not in the marathon this weekend. I can run 5K comfortably. I can run 10K if I have a few little breaks. And One of my blogs that I wrote about actually with running was thinking about what are your goals and why are they your goals. And I did get a little bit caught up for a while in making goals about running faster. Whereas actually my running goals are about running consistently, enjoying it, staying injury free, and just enjoying the well-being benefits of running and getting better to it to a point that it enables that. And maybe, you know, I could think about faster, but at the moment, that's not what I need from it. I need consistency and I need the enjoyment of it. And that's really where that's right. Again, Claire, you've asked a really good question there. On a serious note, do you think people find evidence for their beliefs, assumptions, cognitive bias? And again, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because one of the things that we can do, we can make assumptions and then we can go all Hercule Poirot or whatever our famous detective is, looking for evidence to try and back that up. Look for every reason why we can't possibly do something. Again, sometimes maybe some of the reasons we can't do things are fact-based, but quite often they're not. So I would say definitely I'd look for all sorts of reasons. I've been convinced that swimming wasn't going to be for me, not swimming properly with my face in the water, actually learning how to do front crawl because there's something physically different about my nose linked to the fact I have my tonsils out. It's absolute nonsense. And if you learn to breathe properly, I can actually tell you that it's now not a problem at all. And maybe if it was when I was 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 or whatever, when I was trying to do that, it's not now. So I think sometimes, yes, we can put stories and we can look for facts that are around our beliefs, assumptions. And that's why learning to self-coach or being coached or thinking of and looking for those assumptions is really, really important. Now, this is another one going in the other direction, actually, of a message and an assumption and of a view about myself. Ever since I was really little, I've always been given the message that I am a leader. That's who I am on the playground. And it might be about being bossy. It might be about being organised. I don't know. It might be about being a September baby and growing up quite a lot in adult company, that somebody that is an organiser that takes charge. But I find that really interesting now looking back. And, you know, it says it in my school reports. I can remember it sometimes being used when I'd got something wrong or when I'd been naughty and someone said, "We're disappointed with that because you thought you were a leader, not a follower." The fact was I probably was leading into the misbehaviour and someone was giving me the benefit of the doubt, thinking I must have been copying. But that, who knows? I can't remember fully. And that's not quite the subject of this evening. But it is interesting to see that I got those messages. I went into teaching. I went into teaching straight from university, and without wanting to offend anybody who's in the accountancy profession, I did spend some time looking at that, and then went for teaching instead. And I'd only been in teaching a couple of years before I found myself applying at 24 probably, for the first promoted position to be somebody that was going to be in a secondary school. I think probably these days sort of an assistant head of year. It was around an assistant key stage lead, but it was an equivalent to a head of year. And that was after just a couple of years. And I think that's because of those messages. That's what I had. You are a leader. That is who you are. So these messages can sometimes be positive. I hope they were the right ones, because I then went on to various other leadership positions, and that's something, and that's how I see myself. And I like to try. I've always tried to work quite hard to develop that further, and to do anything that's around leadership as much as I can, and to, you know, to grow and develop. And, you know, totally honestly, as with everybody, there's times when I've not got that well and I've not led well. But that is still something that I see myself as. And that's a message that I can remember hearing right from when I was really, really young. So those ideas of who we are and where they come from, I think is absolutely fascinating. And when we can learn and we can grow and we can look and think, are there any assumptions that aren't helping me that I can challenge and change? That's when I think we can really start to move on. Now, in the last little section this evening, I'm going to talk for a little while about thinking about that whole idea of growing and changing and tying that to some of those leadership qualities that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and just thinking if there are any aspiring leaders listening, or there are is anybody listening, or anybody reflecting on leadership who's downloaded it who might find that useful, that's just going to be sharing some of my thoughts on how leaders can develop some of those great traits that we heard about. But I'm just going to go to our sponsors very briefly before I go into that last section.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by Teachwell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more, and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
So really interestingly there from Bloomsbury, it may well be that there are some interesting leadership books in their catalogue. I might have to check and go and have a read in there and look and see what there is. Because certainly if we're thinking about mindsets and we're thinking about having a growth mindset and we're thinking about accepting and knowing that our traits aren't fixed and our skills aren't fixed and we can grow and we can learn, I think that's really, really important thing and an interesting thing, and the thing that I'm going to explore for the last little section of the show. So great leaders, born or made. I think, you know, I posted that on social media a while ago, and Claire, your comment to that was it's not black and white, it's not simple, it's not one or the other, it is a mix. And I think it's likely, and I'd love to hear what other people think about this, but I think that is absolutely right, and that there is some mix, that there are some things about background and about some circumstances that certainly help people in their leadership journey. But there are also, I think I really strongly agree with what Alice was saying a couple of weeks ago, that these traits aren't fixed, that we can as leaders grow and that we can develop each of these. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a look through some of these traits that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, unpick them and have a think about how leaders might be able to grow those traits. What might they do? How might they think about it? So again, just to go back and think again, there's no single answer to the question, what makes a great leader? It's subjective as well. You know, one person's great leader might be different to another's, though there are different views. And context is also key. So again, it's not just one simple list. What the qualities are that are needed in one particular context might vary from another. But there are some common themes. And that's where we're going to go. So common themes, these aren't fixed. So how might these be developed? We know that great leaders come in different forms, different shapes and sizes. They're not all the same. But there are some common skills, behaviours, traits and qualities that we're going to have a little bit of a look at. So some of the key things, I'm going to start with this list. And again, these are a list that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And I also wrote in my blog about some of the great skills of leaders. So we've got vision, courage, passion, emotional intelligence, judgment, resilience, persuasion, curiosity. How can leaders grow and learn them? Well, I think one of the first things that underpins all of this, and it's the same with any sort of growth and learning and development, it's around assessment. You know, assessing your starting point if you're talking in teacher speak. And that takes a good bit of self-awareness. So I think for leaders to be able to have an actual view about where I'm at the moment, where are my strengths and weaknesses as a leader or as an aspiring leader, maybe to be able to look a little bit more widely and to take that brave step of going out and doing a 360 or asking or getting some feedback, I think that is a really interesting and really important common starting point. But if we unpick some of those and start to think about them separately. So vision. Some people, you know, we've all seen leaders and we describe them as being visionary. We hear them, we feel inspired by them. We, as they talk, they articulate that vision so well and so positively that we understand it. We're almost there with them on that journey. So there's the two parts really to that. First, it's to actually have the vision. And I think one of the things for any aspiring leader or any leader to think about, how do you have vision? Well, how do you see? How do you get time and space to think in a way that allows vision? And it's very difficult. Quite often leaders or aspiring leaders can get really caught up in the day-to-day of running their school or running their department or whatever it is that they're doing. And that can make it difficult to really see the way forward and what you really want for your school, for your department, for your year group, for whatever it is that you lead. So that clear thinking time may be away from the usual sort of stresses and work and what you're doing, the daily grind. And really thinking about that vision in all sorts of different ways, using all five senses. You know, what do you see? What do you hear? Maybe less relevant. What do you smell? What do you touch? But that whole sort of view around what is the vision, producing a vision board, thinking really widely and very much about what, you know, becoming visionary, developing that vision is, for me, all about having the time and the space to do that. So either then in a conversation with yourself, you know, almost coaching yourself, what do I see? What do I mean? Or, you know, having that imaginary friend conversation when you're describing, if that's helpful, or if you do have a thinking partner or somebody to talk and coach through, then that is really, really positive. On to courage. How do you get more courage? And you can't just say, just be more courageous. It's not a fixed trait. It is something that people have more naturally. And, you know, it is linked to genes. And it's also linked very much to childhood and upbringing. And, you know, your whole sort of attitude to risk taking, how you've been brought up and you know, how brave you are about things and how much you can think about consequences. But it's really hard to develop courage in any way. You know, for me, I think about courage when I'm out on my horse and the sort of catastrophizing that goes through my mind. And then as a leader, sometimes the same thing can happen. So sometimes, and this links as well to something that Alice was saying about balancing risk. So courage is something about making bold decisions, about being out there, about facing challenges, about having courageous conversations. What's the right thing to do? Just a different way of thinking. What is the end game? What do you really want? What is the worst that could happen? Those sorts of questions, I think, are useful ones if you're trying to develop courage. But I absolutely acknowledge that is a hard one. And for me, as a leader, that was one where I think if I was doing that self-assessment, that going back where I really, really wanted to grow and develop, that would be my one that I would go and work on, and am still working on that whole sort of idea around being courageous, being bold. You know, sometimes as well, courage isn't just a two-dimensional thing, because there are areas where you may have courage. And, you know, in terms of challenging what's wrong, or challenging, again, it's particularly if you're driven by moral purpose, I find it easier, or not easier, but I find it possible to challenge somebody and have difficult conversations, because I know that that's important, because I know what the reasoning is behind that. But having courage in other areas, again, developing that can be more difficult. Passion is another important trait that we've listed before, and I think that can sometimes be about being in the right place, being with something that you are passionate about. Emotional intelligence, developing emotional intelligence, is about having that mirror, and it's about getting to know yourself and being aware of how you feel and how you feel impacted by different things, and seeing how others are being impacted as well, and being able to pick up on that. But it is possible to learn and grow that. Judgment, I think, is another one that really comes through experience. And it comes through asking some of those questions, those what will happen if, that whole sort of thought about strategy, what will happen next. And it is something that you can learn. But again, you would tend to learn, I think, and grow and develop judgment by having opportunities to work with others and to really open your eyes and see the decisions they're making and learn about why they're making those decisions and what's underpinning them. We listed resilience. Again, it's really simplistic to say just get more resilient. Resilience isn't fixed, and resilience is a key part of mental health. And for me, it's a huge one, because what resilience doesn't mean is just gritting your teeth and grinding through something and just getting as battered and as dented by it as you can, but just keeping going. And for me, for too long, that is what resilience meant. And I realise now that if we are genuinely talking about resilience, it does link to the whole idea of actually being okay about saying when something is difficult, when something is too hard, and when you are not okay. And having the courage, and it comes back again to courage, and having the right people around you where you can actually take a break, take some time out and refresh and re-energize, rather than just keeping plodding on. You know, that you can act like the swan with it all paddling underneath and try and make everyone see that everything's okay. And that may serve a purpose sometimes, but it's not sustainable. So resilience is very complex and very, very important. And learning how resilience works for you and how you feel is also absolutely vital, I think. We talked persuasion as well. That was one of the skills that was listed. And getting people to be able to see your argument, your point of view, and how we can learn that. And I would say that that always starts with the why. If you start with the why and start to help people understand the reasoning behind things, show that you have integrity, show that you can be trusted, that is something that will develop over time. And finally, then we talked curiosity. It's a really interesting trait, and I think sometimes it's something that you have to just allow yourself as a leader and a person to do. So further qualities, again, these are some now that Alice came up, and Alice split qualities into the what we have, the skills, and the who we are, the behaviours and the traits. And if we start with skills, Alice talked about strategic thinking, of having the ability to turn that vision into a workable plan. And I think that's something, again, that comes from that clarity and that space of thought. And I think it comes from learning. So when we talk about these leadership traits not being fixed, learning how to be strategic, learning how to think strategically, learning from strategic thinkers, practicing. That's why it's not a fixed trait. It doesn't just happen magically. Thinking about the idea that strategic thinking does mean, think about how you would present your strategic thoughts on paper. What works best for you? How can you think forward? Articulating purpose clearly and well. Again, that's all about practice. That's about being clear to yourself before you start trying to tell it to others. Being accountable. That, again, is about that courage. It's about being a big enough person to accept when you've got something wrong, but also having the confidence to make those decisions. Building strong cultures based on trust and respect. Now, I think a lot of this is about learning, and to create a strong culture, and there's a lot of this in MPQH, and there is a lot of research around this as well. First thing that a leader would need to do is to be really clear about what that culture needs to look like. What is that culture? And it's a bit like vision. What does that vision then actually look like in practice? So to build that culture, what will people be saying? What will they be doing? How will they be acting? How will they sound? What will they look like when they're doing that? That's really important. So being clear on the culture, communicating clearly what that culture looks like, how we are going to be with each other and how that's going to work is really, really important. And leaders, it's not fixed. I totally agree with what Alice was saying a couple of weeks ago. That is something we can learn to do. So other things, being strong relationship developers, thinking about how we can learn, how we can get on with people, excellent communicators. So the chances to watch, to listen to people, to have clarity on what you want to say and then being able to see it. And then there's another one that I've always found really interesting. How can we learn to balance risk? And this links a little bit, I think, as well to what we were saying about courage. So thinking about risks, thinking about questions like what will happen if, what's the worst that could happen, what risks can we take, what risks can't we take, what can we allow to happen? And I think that's about looking at that very, very clearly, about looking at all possible outcomes, or as many as we can possibly know, and just that really clear, logical thinking. And then we move on to what Alice described when we were talking to her as those behaviours and traits. Not the what we have, they were the skills that we've just talked about, but the what we are. And developing these, changing as people, this takes a really conscious look at ourselves. So if we want to be more compassionate with others, I would say we need to start being more compassionate with ourselves. What do we want to be like with ourselves? What is it that we can celebrate about ourselves? What is it that it's okay if we're not perfect? Inclusivity as well. Again, that's not fixed, but think about how, you know, really genuinely, I think it's really important as leaders to spend time really examining what are your attitudes around inclusivity, around diversity and around collaboration. What are your attitudes? Where do they come from? And how does that feel to you? Because that is really, really important. We talked also about curiosity. And I think that's something that we have to allow ourselves as leaders to be, rather than closing doors, closing windows, being humble. And we taught them bravery. And finally, and this is a really interesting one, I thought, and the whole thing that got me onto talking to Alice was about vulnerability and knowing what that means. So again, this isn't a fixed trait. So we might have been brought up being terribly British, terribly stiff upper lip. We don't share anything about us. When we are leaders in our schools, this is what we are. We're professionals, professionals, professionals. Well, what about spending some time thinking about yourself? Who are you as a human being? What can you share with people about who you are as a person? And start to open up those relationships and those levels of vulnerability. So for me, again, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, it's all about opening up, sharing our stories, saying something that's a little bit about us, facing even what might be a little bit uncomfortable. So, you know, I think about what is it that we found hard? What is it about us as people? It doesn't always have to be about weaknesses and fears, but it can be about sharing about our beliefs, our feelings, our desires, our aspirations, our experiences. It's about letting people know the full you, the people that you work with in your team, in your school. And that's really powerful. And opening those conversations, opening those views about who you are starts to create some connection. So bringing those together then, thinking about being a great leader, thinking about developing those traits, thinking about great leaders born or made, I'm arguing much more on the made side. I don't think it's just black and white, but I think it errs much more to the made side, because I think that we can grow and we can develop as leaders. What are some of the key things we need? Well, I'd love to know what you think, but these are some of the things that I think are some of the keys towards leaders being able to grow some of those great traits, those skills and those abilities. And I have a real privilege to work with cohorts of leaders on MPQH. And I really like how some of those things around culture, some of that really important learning is front and center there. So there are out there some really, really positive ways that people can and that leaders can get out and learn and grow and become those great leaders now. And I see that, and I see the progress that some of these people are making as leaders. And that's such a privilege to see. So in addition to that, obviously, then there are working with other great leaders. And we're fortunate there are some brilliant leaders out there at all levels. Class teachers, CEOs, teaching assistants and people who lead groups of teaching assistants, we see some really positive leadership traits. And I think when they can sort of be pointed out to us and shared as leaders, I think the opportunities to work with great leaders, for them to model some of that great leadership and as to see that happening and see exactly what that looks like, is really positive and helps leaders to learn and grow. Self-awareness is also so important, and anything that can help with that assessment point of where you're at the moment as a leader and where you are growing is also beneficial. So coaching, mentoring, anything like that involves that level of discussion is really positive to build that self-awareness. Also to help you draw out what the positives are that you may have been hiding from yourself, to pick out the assumptions from the facts, to really delve into those barriers and to make some huge transformational change. That's a really positive thing to do. You'll need some commitment to this, though, to grow and to change, and you'll need to put in some time. And you'll also need to really think about your role and the context, seeking feedback, setting intentions, being intentional about who you are and how you want to grow are going to be really, really important. Thank you so much for being here this evening, and thank you for listening. I hope that you've enjoyed it, and I hope there might be a little bit of a takeaway for you. So I just ask you to think, leaders, where are you at the moment? Where are you? What do you think about yourself as a leader and as a human being? Have you got any of those sort of assumptions? You know, have a think back, you know, like me with the running and with the swimming and things like that, or other messages that you've been given, or things that you might be assuming about what you can do and what you can't do. And are they assumptions? Where are you looking at for those? Thinking really carefully. I'd really encourage you to do that. And then think about your leadership. What sort of leader are you? What sort of leader do you want to be? Where are you going? What are you going to do that about that? Because you are, there are some really great leaders out there. And I really, really challenge you to be the very best that you can be. Enjoy and love what you do and continue to work with the children and young people and continue to grow and learn and know that none of us are the finished product. We are all continually work in progress. And I think that's something that we should celebrate. Okay, thank you for listening. Until the next time, goodbye.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.